Live from CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. A lot has happened in California politics over the past week, which is reverberating across the country. LaFonza Butler was sworn in as California's new senator to fulfill the late Senator Dianne Feinstein's seat. And this appointment is throwing a curveball into the 2024 Senate race, already with heavy hitter candidates. The big question mark, will Senator Butler make a run beyond this interim period? And that is a question she has yet to answer publicly. And on the GOP front, California Republicans lost their Speaker of the House, Congressman Kevin McCarthy. The void of that influence can shape the general election, especially in pivotal swing districts. And while Congress is looking different this week in key positions in state politics, Governor Gavin Newsom is in the 11th hour of deciding the fate of hundreds of bills. To guide us through this political whirlwind, we've invited Dustin Gardner, co-author of Politico's California Playbook. Good morning, Dustin.
Good morning. Good to be with you.
What a busy week for you. An interesting and exciting week as a journalist.
Yeah, I know it really has been a whirlwind couple of weeks. I mean, the amount of major political news events in the California political universe, it's been exceptional. Like a lot of us in the press corps really have not had hardly a day off in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, when preparing for this conversation, I was just thinking like where to begin, right? Because so much has happened. So let's start with a huge story last week, and that was the ousting of California's Kevin McCarthy as House Speaker. What has been some of the fallout so far?
Yeah, I mean, really, the major fallout in California politics is the effect this has on House races. The road to a majority in the House of Representatives for either party really does run through California. We have a lot of really key swing districts. And part of that is because of the independent redistricting process in California, because, you know, our districts are drawn by a bipartisan commission. We end up with a lot of truly purple districts that are quite competitive, more than a lot of other states. And so, yeah, I think a lot of people are looking at the fallout in that sense. You know, Kevin McCarthy was a prolific fundraiser for the Republican Party, and he really played a key role in defending and helping flip, you know, some of the seats Republicans have won in California. And so not having him in the speakership and not having him out there as a major fundraiser, that could really reverberate. And, you know, I'm thinking about districts like down in the Palm Springs area. You have Republican Ken Calvert, who's the dean of the GOP delegation in the House. He's, you know, the longest serving member. He faces a very spirited challenge from Democrat Will Rollins. This is a rematch from 2022 when Calvert just narrowly beat Rollins by, you know, just barely a percent, if I remember correctly. I'm also thinking of another swing district in the Santa Clarita area. You have Republican Mike Garcia facing a pretty pretty serious challenge from Democrat George Whitesides. Democrats have tried to flip that seat in several cycles. So you've got a couple of, you know, about, I'd say about a half dozen really key swing seats that are poised to be very competitive this go around. And without McCarthy out there as a key fundraiser, I think Republicans are pretty worried that they're not going to be able to keep up with the fundraising in some of those tight races.
Yeah, you only have to go back like less than 2 weeks ago when we had the second debate for Republican candidates for president. And this was in California. And then following that, I think like 2 days later, you had the California GOP convention. So there's this feeling of this momentum picking up in California, at least for California Republicans. And then you have this happen with the ousting of McCarthy. You know, how does this hurt Republicans in the state, the California GOP?
Yeah, I mean, so beyond the fundraising aspect I was talking about, I think it hurts their candidates in swing districts just from the public sentiment standpoint of people seeing there being a level of dysfunction and chaos in the House of Representatives, and people looking at, you know, the Republican Party and questioning whether they can really build a governing majority. You know, we don't know who the next speaker is going to be to succeed McCarthy. And I think it's really an open question. It could be almost anyone at this point. Republicans are having a really hard time with their thin majority mustering the votes to pick someone. So I think there is a spillover effect there of voters, you know, maybe questioning whether the party can, you know, get its act together and put together a working majority. So I think that's one major effect, you know, but yeah, you're right in terms of Republicans, you know, we're feeling bullish in a lot of these suburban type districts. Like I mentioned, Santa Clarita or the Palm Springs. Springs, Riverside County district. You know, those are areas where Republicans feel like they are doing well with suburban voters. But, you know, these are elements that just throw a lot of uncertainty in that momentum they think they're feeling.
How do you expect this week to play out? Because now there are others jockeying for the speakership.
Yeah, I mean, we really have no idea who the next speaker is going to be. It is the Republican caucus is so divided. And, you know, this is really kind of unprecedented where, you know, you had a relatively small group of Republicans voting with Democrats to throw out a speaker. And, you know, if, you know, the kind of hardline right wing faction of Republicans in the House, if they want to keep exerting that authority, you know, they really have tremendous power to prevent, you know, any sort of moderate from getting in that position. And then, you know, you have a lot of moderates who are skeptical about supporting a hardline right wing speaker of the House. You know, one person that's emerged is Jim Jordan. He's, you know, well-known Trump ally from Ohio, and he's definitely a contender. But again, you know, he's someone where a lot of moderates might not want to vote for him, even if he can get that faction of Trump, very Trump-aligned Republicans to go along with him. So I think it's, you know, this sort of paralysis and chaos in the House could play out for some time. I mean, I think it's very conceivable that we get through this week and there still not be a new Speaker of the House.
And this even goes beyond the Republican Party. I mean, this is the first time in a long time where the Speaker of the House is not from California. You know, you had obviously Nancy Pelosi and then McCarthy. I mean, what, if any, political impact could California feel? It's an incredibly powerful position, and it's been housed in California for quite some time.
Yeah, I mean, you know, since 2019 until last week, there had always been a California, whether a Democrat or Republican, you know, in that speaker's chair wielding that gavel. And not having a Californian there, it does affect the state's ability to get funding for a lot of key, you know, infrastructure projects, a lot of key, you know, just kind of district type projects and funding through legislation. So I think, you know, the state will feel that impact. I mean, Nancy Pelosi was prolific in her ability to get funding, you know, for a lot of the state, especially the Bay Area. Kevin McCarthy definitely, you know, went out of his way to help parts of the Central Valley, you know, do well with the federal infrastructure funding the last couple of years. So I think the state is going to feel that. California has gotten really used to being in this position of having a lot of very senior people in government. We've had Dianne Feinstein, Nancy Pelosi, Kamala Harris, Kevin McCarthy. It's really been a who's who list of people, you know, at the top of the federal government. And really, you know, what we've seen the last couple of weeks is a big changing of the guard. And, you know, with Dianne Feinstein's passing, with Kevin McCarthy out as speaker, it's a new era in terms of California not having that level of influence at the national level.
Yeah. Well, let's move to the Senate. I mean, for anyone who may have missed the fact that we have a new senator, give us a better understanding of who now Senator LaFonza Butler is. We talked about this last Monday following Governor Newsom's appointment, and a lot has happened in the past 7 days.
Yeah. So we have a new senator. LaFonza Butler was sworn in last Tuesday, so almost a week ago. And, you know, her name came as a surprise to a lot of people, especially people, you know, that are not political insiders. She had not held elected office before. She's really not a household name, but she is really well known in political circles. She was for more than a decade the leader of one of California's largest unions. This was an SEIU union that represents long-term caregivers. She was also president of SEIU's California Council and led that very powerful union. She did some corporate consulting for Uber and Lyft for a somewhat brief period. And then more recently, she has led Emily's List, which is a national group that raises money to elect Democratic women that are pro-choice on abortion issues. And this is really just a fundraising juggernaut for the Democratic Party, and is very influential in a lot of key swing races and backing female candidates. So, you know, with that resume, LaFonza Butler, you know, has an incredible amount of political experience at different levels of the state. And she also just has a very compelling personal story. You know, she grew up in Mississippi. Her mother worked multiple jobs taking care of her father, who was very, very sick, had a long-term illness, and he passed away when LaFonza was in high school. And So, you know, she came from a very working class background and worked her way up within SEIU to become a key organizer of that union and a real figure in California politics. And she's also a Black lesbian. She's the first LGBTQ person of color to be a member of the Senate. She's California's first LGBT senator. So really just kind of a very historic candidacy or historic personal story for the new appointee.
Yeah. And as we're getting introduced to the new senator, I mean, she was sworn in, on Wednesday by Vice President Kamala Harris. And already people are already looking to 2024. We already have candidates for the Senate race. And now there's the question of whether Senator Butler is going to run and throw her hat in the ring as well.
Yeah, I mean, really, that is the multi-million dollar question at this point. And I didn't mean to say candidacy a second ago. She's not a candidate yet because we don't know for sure if she's going to run or not. We're all really waiting to see what she's going to say. And she, you know, had signaled she was going to wait until after Dianne Feinstein's funeral, you know, out of respect for the, you know, the political giant whose shoes she's now filling. So now, you know, Feinstein's memorial service was on Thursday. She was buried in a private ceremony at the end of the week. And now all eyes are on LaFonza Butler for her to make that decision. And, you know, the fact that we're waiting this long for a decision kind of makes you can't help but wonder, you know, how serious is she thinking about it? It seems like she really is, you know, kind of weighing the options. But, you know, let's be realistic. She would enter a very tough primary with three household name Democratic House members already running. You know, you have Adam Schiff, Katie Porter, Barbara Lee. They've all been in the race for months. They've all been raising significant amounts of money, and they all have to varying degrees national followings among Democrats and progressives. And so I think, you know, LaFonza Butler would really have her work cut out for her if she chose to run. She does not have, you know, the household name ID that they do have. But there are also some advantages potentially working in her favor. I mean, she will have U.S. Senator on the ballot next to her name should she choose to run. That sort of title and incumbency is always an advantage. As I mentioned, you know, she does have a compelling personal story of her family roots. Her identity as a Black lesbian, it's historic. I think that's compelling to a lot of voters. And she's incredibly young to be in the Senate. At 44 years age, 44 years old, she's quite young to be in the upper chamber. The average age in the Senate was 65, over 65 before she got there. So I think, you know, that could be a compelling factor in her favor. So again, you know, it would be an uphill slog to enter the race this late. The primary is on March 5th, only 5 months away. But, you know, there are some factors potentially working in her favor if she does decide to go that route.
Yeah. And you mentioned, I mean, there are three Democrats that are campaigning for that seat, all Congress members, Adam Schiff, Katie Porter and Barbara Lee. Have any of them commented on this appointment for Senator Butler? And I'm sure they're being asked, you know, their thoughts on whether she runs, because she hasn't announced anything yet publicly.
Yeah, that's right. You know, the three that are already in the race have not said an awful lot. Barbara Lee, she said a couple of things last week, and she, you know, basically just said that she wishes LaFonza Butler well. People might remember Barbara Lee had gotten into a bit of a tiff with the governor about that appointment. The governor said back in 2021 that he would appoint a Black woman. And then, you know, back in September, he was asked, you know, if he would think about Barbara Lee. And he said that he didn't want to pick anyone already in the race, that he wanted an interim appointment because it would be unfair to pick someone that would enter the race this late in the game. And then once LaFonza Butler was appointed, the governor, you know, kind of backtracked a little bit and clarified that he did not appoint her with any certain conditions on whether she runs or not. So that, you know, that had kind of created a big air of tension around the governor's relationship with Barbara Lee. But, you know, when Barbara Lee was asked, she, you know, had very nice things to say about LaFonza Butler and said that she wishes her well. And she even attended a swearing in ceremony for LaFonza Butler. And, you know, there was a picture on social media of the two of them standing together at that ceremony. So, you know, really that's been the extent of what we've seen. You know, I think, yeah, a lot of people are watching for that Barbara Lee dynamic. I haven't seen an awful lot from Schiff or Porter about her appointment. You know, it seems like they're kind of Hanging back and waiting to see what she decides at this point.
In the last minute or so we have, I mean, it's important to also just acknowledge state politics. Governor Newsom is currently going through hundreds of bills on his desk that the state legislature passed, deciding whether to sign them into law or veto them. Do you have a sense of where he is in this process? Because that deadline is fast approaching as well.
So the governor took action on almost 400 bills over the weekend, but that deadline's coming up real quick on October the 14th. And last I checked, he had, I think, about 400 left to act on in the coming days. So he still has a lot of work cut out for him. But actually, you know, what I had seen from a consultant that studies these things every session was that he's actually ahead of pace for compared to typical years. And considering all the major political developments he's had to deal with, including, you know, the appointment of a senator in recent weeks, it's surprising how much the governor got done over the weekend. But yeah, a lot of big pieces of legislation still on the agenda in the coming days. We haven't seen much action from him on housing bills. He's waiting to act on a lot of the major housing related legislation from the year. Also, a big measure related to minimum wage for healthcare workers. That is still sitting on the governor's desk. A lot of eyes on that. So, yeah, we'll be watching very closely in the coming days.
Yeah. Still a little sleep for you, Dustin. That's what I'm thinking.
Yes, absolutely.
Busy times. Thank you so much, Dustin.
Thank you.
Dustin Gardner is the co-author of Politico's California Playbook. And you can learn more about that on our page, capradio.org/insight. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, Cap Radio. I'm Vicky Gonzalez.